If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Oh, hello. Welcome to Ruined. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Allison.
Welcome to Ruined, a podcast where we ruin a horror movie just for you.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm literally sending someone the lesbian master doc right now.
Oh, there you go. Did they update it or something? Wasn't there? I feel like I've seen it in kind of like, quote unquote, the news lately. But I don't know if it's just popping up because like every once in a while it pops up.
Yeah, I think it just pops up. I think it does pop. Oh God, it probably was Renee Rapp or something. I feel like anytime any like lesbian or queer woman in celebrity like comes out or talks about their sexuality, they do mention it. And I do think it is like, that is probably the algorithm of like if you Google it or somebody mentions it,
yeah,
that you read it, like, oh, that's really helpful. And I also say, because I saw, I've said this before, maybe not on the podcast, but I've seen people like criticize the lesbian master doc because they're like, oh, this made me think I couldn't be bisexual. One, that's not the point of it. But also,
No. We
do need to get to the point where it's like any document is just a way to figure out what doors are being knocked on inside
you,
right? Like,
yes.
This, there's no document that's going to tell you you're gay. I mean, it helps.
Or exactly prescriptive and perfect for your unique experience. Like, it's just kind of a catch-all. Like, just see if it opens up anything when you're reading through it.
Yeah.
And then go from there.
And I would also say to my bisexuals is that what I would offer is y'all should start a bisexual master doc that I think would be immensely popular.
I feel like I saw someone saying this on the internet.
Yes, I believe that was me. Because, like, any group like this should just have a master doc of anecdotal evidence because we are basically trying to find ourselves against this cis-heteropatriarchy, you know, like, that we're having to define ourselves. So how do you find that information? How do you find it? Where in my case was always like, oh, well, something's wrong with me, rather than, oh, well, I'm allowed to come at this from a neutral place of discovery about myself, which is what I would hope for younger people.
Yes.
But again, everyone should read the lesbian master doc and see what you think. It's just helpful for everybody to be like,
yeah,
what doors is this knocking on inside me? You know.
Mm-hmm.
But again, yeah, just sending it to someone right now.
That's nice.
And yeah, Allison, how are you doing?
I had a tough week. I had to buy a new phone, and that's... You always think, like, this should be easy. Like, I am on a plan already. I'm not, like, getting set up with a new account. And I just need a different physical phone because my old phone stopped having a microphone. And I couldn't make and receive any phone calls on it.
I'm sorry.
And it was slow and it was old. And, like, I don't like the idea of, like, I was like, I will keep this phone forever. But, like, it became just non-functional. But man, it, like, I could have bought a house in the, like, with the amount of information they needed from me to get a new phone. And as someone whose identity has been stolen twice, I respect the layers of security that they try and provide so someone can't just, like, get a phone in your name and transfer all your information onto it and do what, like, I get it. But it was like, I mean, I was at the AT&T store for like 90 minutes and I couldn't be fucking around on my phone because they had my old phone was part of a trade-in situation. So they took that and erased, and I was like, oh,
my
this is a
God.
Thing.
Yeah, you must have gone completely insane, woman.
I was just like walking and I was like asking the guy, I was like, do you have any pets? I don't know.
Oh.
Like, just like trying to make conversation.
Did he?
He was very kind.
Okay, good.
No, but he was like a lot of people. I was in kind of like my neck of the woods, like Park Slope-ish. And he was like a lot of people. He was from Pakistan and he was like, I am a little afraid of dogs,
aww,
and this area is, like, everybody has a dog, and they all come into the store, and, like, none of them are scary, but I am afraid, like, so
aww,
we talked about that.
That's hard. Yeah, I live in a, that was a Freudian slip. I work in an office where it's full of dogs, and while I feel fine about dogs in general, in what venue would someone be like, please don't make me be surrounded by dogs because I'm afraid of them at my workplace? In LA, I don't know, you know?
Yeah, it's tough. But I got a new phone and I can make and receive calls again so I can like do my job. I don't know. It wasn't money I was super thrilled to spend. It wasn't an afternoon I was really jazzed about. And I don't like the idea of, you know, needing to continue leaning on the ongoing crisis in the Congo so that I can look at TikTok. That is tough. But I am not a new tech person, so I feel like I'm on the leaner side of that nightmare.
I do feel like you were debating whether you should get a phone or a computer. It is funny that your phone just decided for you. It was out of your hands.
Phone was like, my phone was like, it's actually my turn. And I was like, oh, cool. And then this morning I went to like open my laptop and it wouldn't turn on. And I was like, you got to be fucking kidding me. And then it was fine. So
yeah, let me tell you.
For now.
You know, eventually you'll get a new one.
Yeah. Anyway, how are you? Anything going on? Not really.
No, I got nothing. I'm going to speed dating tomorrow.
That's fun.
I guess. We'll see how it goes.
First time?
I've been once. I am interested to see what the age range. The first time I did, I would say lesbian speed dating, but it's really queer women and non-binary people's speed dating. Everyone was 24, and I was literally like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I remember this.
I'm sorry. But I think this should be an older crowd. If not, there is an over 35 speed dating at Ruby Fruit, the lesbian bar in Silver Lake, and I will be going there. I don't even know if speed dating is anything for anybody. I don't know. But I was like, well, at least I'm going to do something. I think maybe that's, I just want to feel like I'm doing something, right?
I think also what it is like, it's just like, it's a bunch of people who might already all be in a bar in a room, in a space hanging out, but it's forcing you to talk to people you don't know as opposed to talking to the people you know and not engaging with the strangers who are also there.
Right, like, which is what I did.
Yeah, it's just kind of like icebreaker games, but like organized.
Yeah. So I will report back if I find my wife and
I would love that.
I'll let you guys know. What about you? Are you doing anything? You broke your phone. Anything else going on?
Phone. I got a really good chicken Caesar wrap yesterday.
We love it.
I posted it on Instagram and got a lot of people being like, what is this? I must have it. It is from Milano Market, if you saw it. And it's an Upper East Side, Italian deli / market.
That sounds great.
Bought. It was so good. It was the kind of thing where I ate the whole thing and it's huge. And afterwards I was like, I wish I had another one. Like, it was just like that delicious.
I desperately want that. Someone made a chicken Caesar like sandwich on like a hoagie roll.
Yes,
that I saw on Instagram, and I want to know more.
And I also want that. So I don't know. It's chicken Caesar season.
Caesar for the soul.
Yeah.
Well,
that's it.
Speaking of the soul, our movie this week for, of course, March Madness month is another classic. It is 1962's Carnival of Souls, which is sort of considered an early, I was going to say pile driver. It's considered an early benchmark of the genre.
Sure.
And it's directed by Herc Harvey. It is his only feature, and he knocks it out of the park.
I mean.
It's written by John Clifford and based on a story that both of them wrote. And it is starring Candace Hillegass, which is an actor I did not know about. And she is, everyone of that era is stunningly beautiful, obviously. What's interesting about her look to me is she looks like she could be on TikTok. She has a very high cheekbones, modern beauty, stunning. I mean,
her face is real. Like, I was like looking at it and I was like, I know this says it was 1962, but this woman looks like she lives in 2024 and is going to do a get ready with me.
Right. Like, she's probably a picture that I feel like Kim Kardashian or somebody would bring in where it's like someone who is maybe not naturally, I mean, she could have had work done back then, but like so stunningly beautiful in a way that looks so modern.
I don't know if that work was that good.
Yeah. I know, exactly. We'd probably be able to tell. But like, either like lower your hairline. I'm not saying they weren't up to all sorts of taping your eyelids back or whatever.
Yeah.
But she is so beautiful and is so good in this movie. And shout out to her memory. She wasn't in a ton of stuff. Oh, she's still with us. Oh, great.
Oh,
and she voice acted a song called Once Upon a Time in Mars. And she's also in a documentary. Well, it was in 2001. Yeah. But anyway, she's still alive as of today. So congratulations.
Outstanding.
Wonderful in this film. So let us begin. We always like to have Allison watch the trailer. What do you think of the trailer for Carnival of Souls, Allison?
I mean, definitely spooky. Mm-hmm. It gave me a lot of, and I think this is just because it was like black and white and she was hot, but I studied in college and watched a lot of Antonioni films, like La Ventura, Le Clis, Blow Up, all of those. So I was just like getting shades of that, which were also like, for being like beautiful films, were also like always a little bit scary.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just like long shots of whatever. very scary. I can kind of piece together the plot of, like, something happens to a woman and then she goes mad about it because either nobody believes her or it didn't happen.
Great. All right. We're on the same page here. We always like to take a baseline scary. Allison, how scary do you find the concept of moving to Salt Lake City to become an organist for a church?
Salt Lake City is very scary. Mm-hmm. Also, as a viewer of The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, you know, a lot of spooky stuff going on there even today. Church organists.
I know.
That's for a Mormon church or a regular flavor?
Well, it seems to be for a Catholic church. So I guess
it was 1962. Were there Mormons yet?
I think they were. So new. I think they were just getting started. No, but they were around. And the reason they're in Salt Lake City is because the carnival itself is shot at a actual carnival pavilion that is on the shores of the Great Salt Lake. So it was actually shot on location. And it was obviously like, Harvey was driving past, it's called the Salt Air Pavilion in Salt Lake City. So it was one of these beautiful old timey, like there's a bowling alley, there's an arcade, there's a dance hall. Like everyone in Salt Lake City would go there all the time, which does sound really fun. Especially like if it was a place like that where everyone goes, that just seems more convenient.
Yes. I will have to say also, I find, and this is a, it's not coastal elitism, but it's just because that's how I grew up. Like, I find being in non-coastal places very scary and claustrophobic, as if I'm going to take to the sea if something happens. But, like, I don't—there is that's something funny. To, like, because I grew up, like, on the water and, like, on the coast and it feels, like— I don't know. There's something about like whenever I, you know, any state that doesn't, you know, touch the ocean, I get like, I'm just like, ooh, scary stuff. Cause where do you go? And it's like, it's actually everywhere. You could go anywhere.
Well, that's a question that our main character will have to deal with. Allison?
Where do you go?
And then finally, based on the trailer and based on what we have discussed, would you like to guess the twist in Carnival of Souls?
Guess the twist.
I'm going to guess that what she is imagining or what she experienced was something she imagined. And right. that she, or maybe, no, I'm going to guess there's somebody who's dead and we will find out that she killed them but didn't even realize. Like, her mind won't let her realize that she killed him.
Allison, better and better. I tell you, every fucking week. All right, let us begin. Ruining Carnival of Souls. Allison. We see two cars full of horny youths pulling up to a stoplight, and they're about to do the devil's dirtiest business, drag racing.
Oh, boy.
And there was, like, where it's, like, before you could really get your hands on weed because, like, you'd go to prison forever, people did just have to drive fast without a seatbelt to feel some kind of thrill.
That's a rush.
Yeah.
Of some kind.
Like, so it makes sense why drag racing was a thing. It's like, well, you weren't allowed to do anything else. We had to drive very fast, dangerously. Also, we see a car with two young men pull up to a stoplight and challenge a car with three young women in it to a drag race. The girls are sort of giggling. Everyone's having a great time, and they agree. So they set out. They are drag racing down like a normal small town road, and they veer onto a dirt country road, still racing dangerously in the middle of the day. And then they both get onto a wooden bridge.
No, why would that even be there?
I don't know. And it's barely wide enough for both cars. So the black car actually swerves. The boy's car swerves and hits the girl's car. And the girl's car sort of rights itself, but then it overcorrects and it slams into the side of the bridge and plunges into the river below. Learn your lessons, teens. Do not drag race. The men, of course, stop and run over to the side. And they're like, oh, my God, that was the 7th, 8th, and 9th day this week. Like, I'm just like, this can't be the first car accident you've been in if you're drag racing during the day.
It's got to be constant. Yeah.
Allison, every man in town comes onto the bridge to help. We see the men talk to the sheriff, and they're like, wow, we don't know what happened. We were actually going the other way, and suddenly their car just swerved. That's the ticket. They just bold-faced lie about what was happening. And the sheriff's kind of like, are you sure that's what happened? You sure you want drag racing? Meanwhile, we see the sheriff's men on the shore, and they're trying to throw like a hook, essentially try to hook the bumper to find it, because apparently the river is very deep. There's a swift current and there's like a sandbar affecting how like they're able to get into the water. But one of them says, we're going to keep looking, obviously, but it's been about 3 hours. And it's not looking good to find them. And with the current, the car could have been swept down the river. If so, we may never find them. Mm-hmm. But of course, the sheriff's men are like, we have to continue looking. We have to do this. We see a bunch of school children run out onto the bridge to watch. They all look down, Allison. And out of the water, out of the water stumbles onto the sandbar one of the women. She's filthy, but she is not soaking wet in the way that you'd think that she would be.
Interesting.
The men all run over to her and they're like, oh, it's Mary Henry from town. And one of them says, Mary, how did you get out? And she looks at him just shocked. And they say, what about the other girls? And Mary says, I don't remember. And we pan over the still water. Later, cleaned up and in a new dress, Mary goes back to the river to watch. There's like a smaller group of men trying to get the car.
Okay.
So show's over, everybody. You know, we may or may not be finding it. She goes back to her car, and we see her reach for the cigarette lighter, and there's a great cut where it cuts to her pulling out an organ button. She's an organist.
Oh. Yes. I can't not think of an organ anymore without thinking of that short sketch, and I think you should leave in a previous season, where it's Fred Willard playing an organ, but he's just throwing plates on the ground.
This movie could use a little bit of that, I think, when it was regards to the organ, because there's a lot of organ talk, a lot of organ work. Okay. We see her playing a gigantic pipe or organ at the church. And the kind of thing, like, you're not going to see that anymore. And also, I grew up with an organ in my house. It was an electric organ, though, so it didn't have, like, the fantastical, almost Dr. Seuss-like structure.
Yeah.
We find out the priest comes to talk to Mary and that she has taken a job at a church in Salt Lake City to be the organist there.
Okay.
And the pastor says, I think you'll be a great fit for you, Mary. And Mary says,
it's just a job to me.
Well, it's not quite the attitude for going into church work.
I'm not taking the vows. I'm only going to play the organ.
Which is so funny to say about being a church organist.
Yeah.
Like to be cutthroat about like, well, you got to make what, $10,000 a year, girl?
Maybe.
But I do think there's something where it's like, it is my job. I can live on my own. That is the underpinning this. Is like, I'm not religious.
Yes.
I don't care. And he tells her, Mary, you know, it really takes more than intellect to be a great musician. You got to let your soul in a little. This movie.
Like, shut up.
Yeah, this movie is full of men telling Mary what to do.
Cool. They sound great.
And she says, well, either way, I'm leaving this morning, like now. And he says, are you going to go see your parents before you get out of town? She says, no, I already left. I'm gone. And at this point, I do want to say, I do want to make a shot-by-shot remake of this movie starring Kristen Wiig. I feel like if she just played it totally seriously, it would be really funny.
Yes, I could see that.
Because the next interaction is the priest saying like, well, have a great time and please let me know when you're back in town. And Mary turns and says, thank you, but I'm never coming back.
Now that's all I'm going to imagine for the rest of the movie.
Iconic.
So thank you.
Please do. The pastor watches her go and he goes over to the organ maker who's like shaving down wood and said, you know, that girl last week was one of three women who went to the river and the only one to survive. You think that she'd appreciate life a little bit more. But the organ maker's like, you know what? She's a tough-minded gal. She knows what she wants. She's getting out of town. The pastor says, I know. I'm just saying. She sure is acting weird. Allison, on her way out of town, Mary has to drive over the bridge.
The bridge.
And we see her have this moment of hesitation, but then she fucking goes. And I'd be terrified, too, because this is a tiny wooden bridge.
Yeah. Rickety as hell. I don't like going over, like, a modern bridge.
Yeah. She turns on the radio. We see her waltz music. It looks like she's in Northeast Ohio. So it was just sort of nice to be like, I'm from that kind of place where there's just a lot of fields and telephone lines. And also, she's driving to Salt Lake City to become a church organist. All right, Mary. She drives on.
I don't know if you have to go all the way there.
She drives through the day. She drives through the night. Allison, she's in the middle of goddamn nowhere. And the radio stops working, which that seems plausible. It's the 60s. You wouldn't radio everywhere.
Yeah. That doesn't send up any red flags, but it would be boring.
We see this great shot of her driving, and then you see reflected in the passenger side window, it's a double of her driving. So she's like driving next to herself. And she turns, and when she looks, it's not her reflection. It is a picture of a white man staring at her. He is both white and he is wearing white face paint. Double white.
Cool.
And
Yuck.
He stares, his eyes are agape and his mouth is wide. And Mary, of course, screams and slams on the brake. But when she looks back, he's gone. It's like, oh, that's insane. Maybe I'm falling asleep. Allison, she starts to drive down the road again. She looks forward and there is that man. with theatrical makeup on. He has sort of a white face and then like a smoky eye.
Oh, chic.
He's standing in the middle of the road. And I'm like, Mary, you went too far. You ended up in L.A. Okay, you got to turn back and go back to Salt Lake. You went a little too far this time.
Yeah, he's in a clown workshop and don't want
to
bother him.
We'll have to see it. You already bought a ticket. And it's your third date. And now you know that it will be the last one. When she, of course, looks back to the road, the man is gone. She drives on and we see this huge shape, like a huge structure in the distance. And I hope you can see by now this is going to be hard to do a Who Will Survive or a what would you do? Because we're already in a place where it's like, well, you're seeing a guy everywhere.
Yeah.
You see Mary. It's now daytime. She pulls into a gas station outside Salt Lake City. And while the attendant is pumping her gas, she asks about, like, what was that big, that pavilion out there? He's like, oh, it used to be this, like, ritzy spa. Like, it was on the Salt Lake. You know, like, rich people come in and, like, stay there. And then the salt started to dry, like basically the lake dried up. So there's no lake. And so it turned into a dance hall. And then it became a carnival grounds. And everyone used to go. It used to be this huge thing. And it's just been abandoned for years. So nobody really goes over there anymore. Mary shows the attendant the address of a rooming house in town. And it's like, wow, what a time where it's like, I'm going to show up and I'm going to live in this lady's house. And she's going to be fine with that. And we'll see each other around. Mm-hmm. And she goes to the boarding house. And she sort of cringes when she sees the room. And the boarding house woman, Mrs. Thomas, was like, this is what I've got.
Yeah.
I don't know what you think this is. It's 1962. This is what's available.
This or nothing. She says,
you know, I could have rented this yesterday. And Mary said, nope, thank you so much. It's perfect. And she has a private bathroom. And again, probably a 60s thing. Mrs. Thomas says, you know what? And also feel free to take as many baths as you want. I'm not someone who like creates a fuss about that. So like, is that water usage? I guess you're in Utah. Maybe they were, as we all should be concerned about our water usage. She says, thank you. I really appreciate it. Allison, Mary starts getting ready for bed. She sees the man outside the window.
Nope.
Again, he has full white face and eyeshadow. And it is funny because I do think in the 60s, like, wow, a man in makeup was the most terrifying thing they could imagine. Like, it destroyed everything.
Chilling.
Whereas now it's like, oh, I'm sorry, the party's next door. Like, sorry, you came to the place.
Right.
Or like the...
And like, do you know where there's a good like coffee shop around here? Like, it's just...
Right, like there would... if anything, I feel better if he's wearing makeup. Because I'm like, I can contextualize that.
I feel much safer.
A guy looking through the window. Well, we're going to have a different conversation. In the morning, Mary goes to meet the priest at her new church. He invites her to a social to meet everybody. And Mary is like, I'm not doing that. He says, well, you know, you can't let yourself live in isolation, dear. And that's a common theme is that Mary feels disconnected and is isolated and kind of struggles to fit in, as we all do. But Mary's like, I am here to do my job. And my job is to play the organ like a motherfucker. And she sits down and she just starts shredding. And the priest is thrilled, right? And he's like, I'll let you practice. I'll be next door. And then you see the priest hug a woman. And I was like, you see the priest and his mom? I don't know who this lady is. But they're listening from downstairs and they're loving the organ music. And we also see a guy like doing some sort of lawn work. And he looks over and everyone's just thrilled to hear the organ.
Good.
And it is a beautiful, it's the most absurd musical instrument.
Yes, it really is. When you like think about it and look at it, you're like, why?
We really went for it with that.
We did.
So she's practicing, and as she's looking at all the stained glass in the church, gorgeous church. We see the man in the white face enter the church, and the music cuts out. When the priest comes back upstairs just to check everything, Mary is away from the organ and is examining a stained glass window. He says, oh, what do you see? And she's like, oh, no, I'm nothing. Everything's fine. He's like, okay. I have an errand to run near the lake. Would you want to come with me, and I'll sort of show you around the town?
That sounds so vague, even though I feel like it's fine in the scenario, but it's like, I have to go run an errand near the lake. It's like, I have to dump a body. Want to come with?
Yeah, well, I guess he's a priest, so it's like an elderly priest where it's like, I don't know what kind of errands. Visiting somebody, maybe can't make it to the church. And she says, I would love that. Could we go to that pavilion? And he's like, yeah, would you like to go check it out? She's like, I would if I was with you, which I think is a good policy, Mary.
Yes. Let's not do things alone that are scary.
So we go and they drive up to the entrance and Mary says, would you go in with me? And he says, oh, it's actually illegal to go on the grounds. Like it's cordoned off. And I'm a priest. It would be unseemly for me to go do that. Also, why do you want to go in? It's an abandoned carnival grounds, you know? There's nothing going on.
Feels not like a young woman's fun activity.
She says, I don't know. I feel drawn to it in some way. I guess I want to satisfy my curiosity that it's not more than it seems. Well, maybe I'll come back later. And they turn and they leave. And of course, watching them as they go from inside one of the abandoned carnival buildings, it is the man. And I'm going to call him the carnival man. He is credited as the man. But I want to be clear that he is the carnival man.
Okay, copy.
He's a very carnival guy. On Wikipedia, he's called the man, and then in parentheses it says, the main ghoul. and he is. He's the most, the ghoul that appears the most. We could all agree with that. And it is funny because I thought of him as a ghoul without reading that. Like, he is, that's the word for it. It's like, oh, there's ghoul. A ghoul outside.
Yeah.
He's not a creature.
Ghoul's night out.
Yeah, it's, listen, he's going to have a lot of ghouls nights out before the end of this. So he, of course, is watching. Mary heads back to the boarding house. She and the boarding house lady Kiki about her staying there, and they're really bonding. And the boarding house lady says, oh, you know, the only other person staying here is Mr. Linden. He's like two doors down from you. And she asks, oh, Mary, did you have dinner? And Mary's like, oh, I completely forgot. Cannot relate. And the lady says, you know, this ain't no boarding house. And I, at this point, I was like, if it's not a boarding house, what the hell is this? I guess it's a rooming house, which I don't know the distinction.
I don't think that that's like a thing anymore.
Yeah, so I think we're going to think boarding house, so, you would have dinner provided. But as of right now, it's okay. Just you rent a room.
It's just a bed,
and then you
yeah.
buy your own groceries. And Mary says that. It's like, you don't have to do that. She says, no, I have some sandwich fixings. Would you want me to bring it up to you? I was like, that's some real service here.
It's nice.
In this rooming house.
Yeah. I'll take a sandwich.
And Mary says, you know, I think you mentioned taking a bath the last night. I think that sounds so good. I'm going to take one of those baths you mentioned. And she says, and use all the water you want. I'm 8-1 to make a fuss about a thing like that.
That feels weird.
I don't know if it's just like a...
Is it supposed to feel weird?
I think so. But I also think, like, I don't know. It could be a Salt Lake thing. You know what I mean?
If somebody kept being like, take a bath, as many baths as you want, use all the water, I'd be like, that sounds like something I'm not supposed to do now.
Well, Mary is not catching on to it. So we see her take a bath, and there's a knock at the door. She's assumed it's Mrs. Thomas, and she says, oh, come in. And the person goes to open the door, but there's a chain lock on it. Allison, it is not Mrs. Thomas. It is some guy we have not seen before.
Of course it's some guy.
And of course, he then closes the door. And she says, oh, sorry, I'll be right there. And without thinking, she puts on a robe or like a towel. She undoes the lock and she opens the door. And when the guy sees the door open, he steps into the room. Allison, at this point in the movie, what would you do?
What would you do?
Going to another place. I'm leaving.
Right.
I'm getting out of Salt Lake. Going back to Ohio. Face my demons there.
Yeah, I feel like it is. My answer would be go ape shit in the moment.
Yeah,
just start screaming.
Oh, in the moment, yes.
Absolutely freak out.
I'd say that I have a gun.
Yes, that's a great point.
I'd be like, I have a gun in here. And then hope that that is scary.
I love that. Yeah, so it is Mr. Linden, the other resident, the other boarder, who proceeds to barge in and hit on Mary in her towel, which she's clearly very uncomfortable with. And she's trying to close the door and, like, ask him to leave. And she says, well, could you at least please wait? And she goes and runs and puts her robe on. And it is, he watches her through the crack in the door. And there's, like, sultry music playing. And I do appreciate there's not as much normalization of a peeping Tom or, like, a private spying, which as a woman is a lot of stuff that you wouldn't expect it to be. And growing up, I was always like, well, that's not good if that's something that men are doing. And we're all just sort of...
Men are just always watching us do stuff without letting us know they're doing
that. It's just uncomfortable to think about.
Very.
So she goes over to talk to Mr. Linden, and she's literally trying to push the door closed on him. And he's just running any game he can come up with. He's like, oh, it's only us here. You're new to town. Let me take you to dinner. You don't want to eat dinner alone. It sure seems lonesome in your room here alone. And she's like, I am not interested. I already have plans to have dinner brought to my room. I don't need to hang out with you. And he's like, well, we'll try again tomorrow. Like, clearly it's not even that he's not picking it up. She's physically shutting the door and he's pushing back on
it,
right? There's no question of what her interest in this, which is please leave my room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
She's able to push him out. But then when she opens the door later and checks the hallway, she approaches the stairwell and looks down and she sees at the bottom the man, the carnival man.
The ghoul or the...
The carnival okay. man. Yes, the ghoul.
Carnival man.
She, of course, runs in her room screaming. There's Amelia knock on the door.
Of course he's around.
And she's like, oh my God, it's the ghoul. No, this time it is Mrs. Thomas. And she does have a sandwich and coffee. And Mary basically...
At night?
Well, and we'll get into it. Mary said, well, who is that freaky guy? But of course, Mrs. Thomas doesn't see him. And, right. but Mary's like, I think this guy's been following me. And Mrs. Thomas says, it sounds like you really need to eat a meal. You just moved here. You're all discombobulated. Eat this. Yep. Go to bed. It's totally fine. It's just you, me and Mr. Linden, who also sucks. So that's not much of a consolation. But Mary's like, okay, I guess maybe I am kind of rattled. And, you know, I was in that car accident last week. And so Mrs. Thomas leaves and says, hey, and don't drink the coffee if it keeps you up. You're already kind of jittery. Mary says goodnight, and she takes a drink of the coffee, and she sort of wearily sighs and says, you know, like, drinking a cup never keeps me up. Cut to her eyes wide open and staring out the window at 3 a.m, which is a genuinely funny cut. Like, it's just like...
Yes, that is really
it
funny.
It never keeps me up. Staring daggers out the window looking for the ghoul to arrive.
It's also just reminding me of the scene in Airplane where the couple is ordering coffee and the guy gets a second. He's like, you know, I will have a second cup. And you hear the, like, interior monologue of his wife going, like, that's odd. Jim never has a second cup of coffee at home. And then, like, later when everybody's, like, getting sick and going nuts, she's like, that's odd. Jim never vomits at home.
That's funny.
It's so funny.
we also see her get up in the night and look out the window, of course, at the sprawling carnival pavilion in the distance. In the morning, Mr. Linden stops by again.
Great.
And I was like, oh my God, this guy. This time, he's got a mug and two, like a coffee carafe. And Mary is much more welcoming. Like, she's much warmer.
Okay.
And again, I was like, okay, so now they're chill. I was like, well, I guess we made progress, and I can't guess what their dynamic's supposed to be from my exhausted, twisted 2024 brain. That's fair. So I was like, okay, but again, they do explore this in an interesting way. So that's when it happens. I'm like, all right, well, I guess maybe I didn't understand what last night was about. And he gives her coffee and he offers her a shot of whiskey in her coffee. She says, I'm a church organist. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry.
I thought it was just a job. Well,
that's what he says. I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize you're religious. He's like, no, it's just a job. I'm a professional organist. It's like, well, then what's the mixed messages, gal?
What the fuck are we talking about?
And he says, wow. You don't care about the church. Like, thinking like that, doesn't it give you nightmares? And she says, I did feel weird last night. Not for that reason. I obviously don't give a fuck about a religion. But I don't know why. I couldn't possibly be that haunted carnival. I could see from my window. It's probably something else.
No, that wouldn't keep you up at night.
We find out that Mr. Linden works on a warehouse, and he clearly has a chip on his shoulder. Like, anytime she pushes back or seems smarter than him, he's like, oh, you don't have to use all these big words with me, honey. Like, I'm a blue-collar guy. And she's a musician, and she's obviously, like, very well-spoken and stunningly beautiful. And he's like, oh, yeah, last night you didn't want to talk to me. She's like, well, you know, I guess everything seems better in the daylight. At night, your fantasies can get out of hand. Again, they kiki, and she says, see, this is what I needed this morning. Thank you. I actually did need to speak to someone.
Okay.
And he's like, well, you might need it at night, too. She says, well, I'm sure you have to go to work, Mr. Linden. And he says, well, don't you? She's like, oh, no, today I have the whole day free for shopping. And she shuts the door in his face.
That sounds amazing.
Time for a shopping scene.
Oh, my God. I would love, like, a montage in a dressing room.
Well, so she only tries on one thing, but she looks great in it. And she's talking to a shop girl. She's trying on this, like, very chic black dress. And the shop girl's talking to her about it. She goes back into the dressing room to change into her regular dress. And when she looks, the air seems to shimmer and warp. And it's just for a second. And she puts her original dress back on. When she walks back up, she takes the dress. The shop girl says, okay, I'm ready to check out. The shop girl reacts like she doesn't even see Mary, even though they had just been chatting moments before. Hmm. Mary, of course, freaks out, runs up to another woman, runs up to a man. No one in the department store will answer or acknowledge her and seemingly can't hear her.
Right.
She runs out to the street. Same deal. She's just like walking by people. No one's seeing her. No one responding to her. She ends up in a park under a tree, and we see her reach up and grab a branch to, like, ground herself, and she looks up and there's a bird chirping in the leaves. And we see her walk to a drinking fountain, and when she looks up, she sees dark men's pants, and she looks up and gasps. Allison, you know it's the carnival man.
Of course it's the carnival man.
But when she runs, she slams into runs into the arms of another man, and when she looks back, it's not the carnival man. It's just some random guy.
Okay.
Who says, I'm sorry, I was just waiting to have a drink. And the man whose arms she was now in, he said, "My name is Mr. Samuels. You clearly had a fright. Control yourself. My office is right across the street if you'd like to step in there and talk to me." And I was like, "Watch your uterus." These guys, doctors back then, control yourself.
All kinds of kooky ass shit.
I'm just saying, like, this is, there's going to be some sort of therapy he's going to try to fix you with. You know what I mean? And she says, "Can I go with you now?" And he says, "Yes." So they go into Dr. Samuel's office, and he basically, she talks sitting in a chair, and he turns with the back of the chair to her to take notes. I don't know if that was a 60s thing. I don't know if it was just to set up something later.
Yeah.
But she says, "Look, I was in this car accident a week ago, basically. I was in this car accident. I moved here. I don't know anyone. I keep seeing this guy." And then for about 15 minutes, no one could see or hear me as if I wasn't a part of the world around me. And I don't know what to do. And he turns back to her and says, sorry for my back. I just want to write something down. She's like, "Well, I've been talking for an hour. And my point is, this stuff's happening and I can't explain it, but I do know that man is following me."
Yeah.
And Dr. Samuel says, "Girl, let's cut the shit. Okay. This guy can't fly around and be everywhere at once. If I had been in the park, me and that other guy would have seen him. I didn't see anyone else. Do you think maybe this could be trauma after your car accident?" She's like, "I'm a reasonable person. I am a realist. I'm not just seeing a guy following around."
Right.
And he says, "Look, I'm not telling you what you're experiencing, but I'm saying it's completely reasonable that your brain would be trying to rationalize what's going on." You know,
right.
He's like, "Have you never walked up to someone at a party and thought it was your best friend and they got there and it was somebody else?"
Yes.
"Have you never walked into a room and been convinced, oh, they were just talking about me and then they were talking about something else?" Like, the brain is trying to make connections, right? So it makes sense that you had this extremely traumatic experience. You moved across the country. You don't know anyone. Maybe your brain is playing tricks on you. And she says, "Well, I guess I just have always felt that I sort of don't know how to fit in and be a part of society." And Allison, the example she gives is, "I don't want to have a boyfriend." And he says, "Well, how long have you felt that way?" She's like, "I don't know. I guess I didn't think about it till now."
Got it.
Mm-hmm. And she says, I don't know if I'm capable of being close to people." And he's like, "Well, I mean, I think you just have to cut yourself some slack here, Mary. You've had a tough week. And just accept that perhaps part of this is psychological. And if you come and if you see me, then we'll sort of unpack it."
Yeah.
And Mary's like, I am a professional organist. I'm not here to play games, Dr. Samuels. If my imagination is playing tricks on me and I can stop it by finally addressing it, then I'm going to the Carnival Pavilion." And he's like, "Oh, right. The Carnival Pavilion is part of this too. I mean, clearly, like, there's some significance to you. Like, you're drawn to it. Again, I think that's something we should talk about."
Yeah, I do think that's something that should get talked about.
And she's like, "Or if this is all in my head and it's part of it, then I should just go there right now. Like, I can't live like this. I can't be terrorized by some guy showing up. I have a new job.
I'm a church organist and I'm obsessed with the carnival."
And she stands up and says, "The time is to go is now. And if I have to go, I'll go alone." And she storms out.
I need Kristen Wiig to do a movie, to do this movie.
And I think it's like, I don't want it to be like, I'm making fun of this. I love this movie.
No, it's incredible.
I see
this version and it makes sense to me as like a good, scary, psychological movie of the 60s. But to make it now and have it be Kristen Wiig, knowing how she is as an actress, like, it would be so funny.
It's like, did you ever see her Lifetime movie with Will Ferrell?
I saw parts of it. I didn't watch it all. But yeah, it's
like it's they pretty much play it seriously. But then, like, the moments where A Deadly Adoption, 2015, like, it's just a perfect parody of that. And there's really only a couple scenes that are comedic, and they hit so much harder as a result of it. Like, it's serious, and then she has to, like, take a rowboat to, like, save someone's life or something. It's
so
great.
Funny.
She's so funny. Like, point-by-point remake of this, her playing it totally straight is the way to go. And with that being said, Allison, at this point in the film, who will survive?
Who will survive?
I don't think Mary's going to make it.
Okay. And how about Mr. Linden? What do we think about him?
Mr. Linden, I think he'll die. I think our carnival ghoul will survive.
Yeah. And how about the priest in the church?
I think he'll survive and he maybe goes on and tells her story moving forward.
Great. Okay, so she's just fucking going to the carnival grounds alone.
About fucking time, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're getting a good look at it, right? So she wanders around the abandoned buildings. There's a big metal indoor slide, which I remember those from being a kid from carnivals.
Oh, yeah.
So fun. We see a cushion come sliding down. No one's on it, of course. We see her walk past. There's a sign for saltwater bathing. Like, you could basically go to the carnival and then walk down to the beach, which would be really fun.
That's a part I would enjoy.
And also, she's wearing heels this entire movie. So she's, like, walking through this abandoned wreck of a place on sand. Like, and she looks great doing it.
Yeah.
She finds herself inside of a gigantic room that's basically part bowling alley, part dance hall. It's gigantic, which does sound fun.
People really knew how to, like, entertain in the 60s and 50s. There were activities. Third spaces.
The internet didn't exist, right? So, like, right. Now the internet is our third space, yeah. Really.
The internet is my bowling alley.
Yeah, but back then they're like, a gorgeous, abandoned bowling alley. We've got to do it. We've got to bring it to the town. She walks under the pier, and of course we see, though she doesn't at the time, floating in the water is the corpse of the carnival man. Allison, it was
the
a
carnival
fucking bust.
Dead?
Well, I think we can go ahead and say he's been dead. He didn't just die in that moment. He has been part of the supernatural this whole time.
Got it.
But it was a bust. She goes and walks around. Nothing happens. She goes back to her house, or back to the boarding house, and Mr. Linden tries to ask her out again. And this time, she's totally a cold fish. She's like, I've already eaten. I have to go practice the organ like I do. And he goes, what, are you afraid of men?
Yeah.
Like, well, again, Mr. Linden. First of all, obviously.
Sir,
second
yes.
of all, I have a job. I'm a professional organist. I don't fuck around.
Yeah.
He says, you seem so cold. This morning, you were so warm. And Mary says, yeah, this morning I really needed company. He says, well, how about this? You let me walk you home and I'll show you a place around here that's nice. It's better than walking home alone. And Mary looks really sad and says, I guess you're right. And boy, doesn't that say it all. Been there, sister.
Oof.
That night we see Mary playing in the church. She starts to hear her music and then other organ music. And there's this great moment where, like, she stops playing and she can still hear the organ music. And then she lifts her hands. And when she looks down, she's playing the music. And she enters this sort of fugue state where she's sort of playing the organ music and starts to see images, for one of them being the carnival man emerging out of the salt lake, soaking wet, walking towards her.
Not great.
And then a woman. And then another woman. And then another man, just figures emerging out of the lake coming towards her.
Okay.
And we also see images of the carnival when it was open. So it's like she's playing this more and more cacophonous, bizarre organ music. And couples are dancing. They're spinning around the big dance hall. And they're, what a carnival. Truly, I would love to go to this carnival. It looks like a blast. The carnival man approaches her in her reverie. And he holds out his hands as if he's about to strangle her. Mm-hmm. Allison, in real life, we see the priest's hands slam down on Mary's hands. And he's like, what kind of organ music is this? And she's startled. But again, she's still kind of in a fugue state. He says, This is blasphemous. Why are you playing in this house of God? This organ is an instrument of God. This place has meaning to us. If it doesn't to you too, then I pity you and your lack of soul.
Jesus.
And I must ask you to resign as organist.
Oh, no.
Mary stands up. Again, she's a woman of pride. She also seems to be in some sort of supernatural stupor.
Yes.
She picks up her music, and as she's about to walk out, the priest goes, I'm not turning my back on you. There's help here for you, and I hope you accept it. You literally just fired your bitch.
Her.
Grow up.
You yelled at her and fired her, and then you're like, but we'll help you. And it's like,
You thought she was playing that organ too fast and good, and you got scared and fired her. You did turn your back on her.
Yes, absolutely. It's the definition of it.
Mary walks out, and Linden has been waiting there. And he says, boy, you have been waiting a long time. Again, you basically forced her to let you walk her home. And he says, let me just show you the place I had in my head. You know, we'll get a drink. We go to this bar. It's hopping. People are dancing. They're having a beer. But Mary looks, like, completely uninterested and incredibly sad. Of course, Linden doesn't actually care about her as a person. So he's getting drunker and he starts to get meaner, right? He's like, oh, so you don't drink either? You don't like to dance? You don't like to drink? Just say it. You don't like a man to hold you close. Is that it? Been there, girl. Yep. Lyndon goes out. He goes to put quarters in the jukebox. And his friend says, who's that? That's not one of those pigs you're usually dragging around. And Lyndon's like, don't even think about it. I got something cooking on the stove. And friend says, yeah, well, let me help you boil it over. And Lyndon comes back and he's like, how do I get this broad to like me? He says, well, it's a college friend of mine. He was going to bring over a woman who wanted to meet me. But I said, no, I'm here with the hottest woman in town. And Mary is basically silent and staring, you know, because she'd be being haunted by a ghoul.
Yeah, she's got other stuff going on.
And again, Lyndon, like, because she's not giving him attention, just starts madder and madder. And he's like, oh, you're not going to drink? And she takes a little sip of beer and he goes, I paid good money for that. It's not poison.
Now I'm going to think it is.
Yeah, he's like, I don't get you. Yesterday you put me off, but I get it. You're class. And today everything I say is okay. You're like a mouse now. And Mary tells him, yesterday I didn't care and now I do. I want to be here with you. And she says, he says, you want to be here with me or with anybody? And she tells him, with you. He says, well, why don't you thaw out now? Or maybe you don't even want me talking to you.
What a bitch.
And he turns away and Mary's like, no, I don't want to be alone tonight. I want to be near you. This movie is about Compette. You know what I was going to say. Watching this, I was like, she doesn't want to be alone because there's a ghoul. And as a man, it's like, well, this offers me a level of protection, even though this guy is being very mean to me.
Yes.
At every point. But she says, no, I don't want to be alone tonight. I want to be with you tonight. He's all smiles. He takes her hand. He says, well, how will we go back to the boarding house? And Mary looks so absolutely miserable as they go back home. Because it's penetration o'clock, Allison. Her least favorite time of day from the sounds of it.
Seems like it.
So they walk back in. She's sober. Lyndon is like staggering and falling against the wall.
Cool vibes.
And they get to her door. And it's this great sequence where it's dark on the inside. So they're lit behind. And he's like, you don't want to go in there all by yourself, do you? Let me come in for a while. You don't want to be alone. And she pushes him off really angrily. But then she says no. And she goes over and she like turns the light and puts her head in a dresser. And he comes up behind her, he starts kissing her neck. And when Mary looks up, it's the carnival man.
Yeah, of course it is.
She starts screaming and panicking. And Lyndon says, what's wrong with you? And she says, there's a man following me and I went to the carnival. I don't want to be left alone. Again, that is what Compette feels like. At least this is enough to put Lyndon off his lunch. And when he runs out, Mary's screaming and crying and she starts pushing all the furniture in front of the door. Now, you'd say, Mary, the carnival ghoul showed up. He just materialized in the room. And the door is not the issue.
Yeah, I don't think that, like, a desk and a chair is going to stop him.
Yeah. In the morning, Mrs. Thomas is there, and she's talking to Dr. Samuels. And she says, I'm so glad you happened by. He's like, well, I came to visit her because I saw her for a session yesterday, and I was kind of concerned. I just want to make sure she's okay. She seems to refuse my help, but I don't know. I'm not sure what to tell her. She's had so much trauma recently. And Mrs. Thomas says, well, I can't have her in my house. She's screaming and crying, moving furniture around. Like, I can't do it. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Thomas was like, no worries. I spoke to her. She wants to leave town immediately. And Mrs. Thomas is like, well, I hope she does leave. Dr. Samuel replies, I hope she can. A little bit later on, Mary goes to leave. And Mrs. Thomas says, you know, I can't refund your weeks of rent when you leave like this. And Mary looks at her, says nothing, and just walks out. On her way out of town, Allison, Mary's car starts to break down. It's jerking, it's lurching. She's forced to go to the gas station she visited on her way out of town.
Yes.
And she pulls into the garage part and he says, it sounds like it's the transmission, but I'll have to put it up and take a look at it. And she says, can I just sit in here? And he says, suit yourself. I didn't know you could sit in there. You probably can't anymore. That seems dangerous. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. I don't think you can.
No, I feel like some idiot, or by that mean, I would just open the door. I saw a
TikTok of someone who, like, was napping in the back of their car when it got taken. No. And then, like, all of a sudden, they woke up and they were, like, the car was raised on the thing and, like, no one was really around.
That's funny.
And they were like, oh, no.
That's very funny.
So.
But he's like, yeah, go ahead. So he raises the car up. And now she's basically trapped there. She has trapped herself in the air.
Of course.
We see another car pull in, and the attendant has to go pump the gas. There's only one guy. So he goes out to pump this other car's gas. Allison, the door of the garage creaks open. Mm-mm. We hear the sound of a man entering the garage.
Not great.
sounds like some kind of a carnival man.
I bet it is.
From the sound of it. He turns the lift and the car starts slowly lowering. And it sounds like he's coming around the driver's side, and Mary sort of like lurches over to the passenger side and then falls out the passenger side door. And when she does, she goes, oh, but she's okay.
Okay.
She gets up. She starts hauling ass again, all in heels, having to run so much of this movie, hauls ass down the street. She runs to the bus station and runs up to the cashier and says, when is the next eastbound bus leaving? Allison, we see the air shimmer. The cashier cannot hear her. And the guy who's next in line kind of pushes past her. She's begging him, like, I need to get out of here. I need to leave. And we hear an announcement. The eastbound bus is leaving on gate 9. She runs down. Allison, she boards the bus. It is entirely full of ghouls.
All ghouls?
Everyone. All ghouls.
All ghouls. Oops, all ghouls.
Like they're going to ghoul school, ghoul bitch. School. This the whole ghoul bus school of bus? Ghouls. Everyone has white makeup, and they all kind of start laughing as they stand up. She, of course, runs out panicked.
Yes.
She naturally runs down to the train station. I appreciate she's trying everything.
Yeah.
Right? She
and
can't
good
accept.
That there are bus and train stations
absolutely.
For her to
I
go
mean,
to.
It looks like a beautiful city, Salt Lake. She runs to a doorway just as people are leaving, and she slams into the door and is like, please, let me out, please. You can see me, can't you? And she looks through, and she looks shocked. And I think we're going to think she saw the carnival man again. We see her running down an alley after she escapes, and a car almost hits her. And we hear her in voiceover, why can't they see me? What is happening? She runs up to a cop. And at this point, Mary, this is on you. You know this is how it's going to go. The cop car pulls away. Mm-hmm. She runs to the taxi zone. Girl, the answer is no one can see you.
Yeah.
Allison, she runs back to the park. And she reaches up and puts her hand on the same branch. And she hears a bird chirping the exact same way. She's like, oh, right. Dr. Samuel's office is in here. She runs to Dr. Samuel's office.
Okay.
Again, she talks to him. His back is to her in the chair as he writes. It's like,
I came to you, doctor, because you're my last hope. He's trying to take me back somewhere. Doctor, you've got to tell me what to do.
Allison, the chair turns around. Who do you think's in that chair?
Carnival ghoul.
It's the carnival man.
Yeah.
Mary, of course, screams. She jerks her head up. It turns out she had just dozed off in the garage.
Okay.
And the car is now on the floor, and she backs up as the attendant runs out, and she peels away. The car seems totally fine.
Okay.
And the attendant didn't even do anything.
Right.
And I was like, okay. Unfortunately, she knows she can't just drive out of town.
No.
This is going to follow her. She has to go back to the carnival grounds to find out what the fuck, where does this carnival man want to take me?
Yeah.
She parks, and we see sort of she's staring out over the dry lake bed, and we sort of see these images come to her. Again, we see the carnival man emerging from the lake and two ghoulish women emerging. We see night falls and lights come up. And as Mary watches, the couples from her sort of organ mania visions start mm-hmm. to dance amongst the shining silver decorations. And they all have ghoulish makeup on, which I love.
I mean, chic.
And there's great shots where, like, the camera is basically looking up into individual faces, like, as the ghouls dance. And there's this woman who just looks dead in the camera. But it's very affecting, actually.
Yeah, I bet.
And she sees herself as a ghoul dancing. And she and the carnival man dance around and around. So we have, like, a normal Mary and a ghoul Mary. It really is Ghoul's Night Out.
Ghoul's Night Out.
And he dips her, and they freeze as if in an old-timey photo, and Mary screams. Allison, her scream alerts all of the ghouls, the dancing ghouls, turn and start chasing after her.
Okay.
She runs out of the hall, and I was shocked to find it's actually still daylight. So I was like, I guess we were inside, and her imagining was at night, but it's 2 p.m. as far as I could tell.
Sure.
And they chase her under the dance hall, through under the pier, and onto the beach. And they're leaping out from pillars as she screams. Her hair looks better than ever. Her hair looks better in the scene than the rest of the movie, which I absolutely loved. She runs, and the ghoulish crowd chases her down on the beach. And she falls. And she looks up, and they descend upon her. Mm. Sometime later, the priest and the sheriff, they go to the carnival grounds where her car was found. And the sheriff says, you could see her footprints. And it looks like she fell here. But then nothing. And Allison, we cut back to that lonely wooden bridge in her hometown.
Yeah.
Where they have finally found the car. It took them a little while. But they're now dragging it out with a winch. And when they pull it up, all three girls are inside, including Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Dead.
Yeah.
The Carnival of Souls.
Huh.
That's a good one, huh?
Yeah. So she was dead the whole time.
Yes, yeah.
It was dying.
Yes, yeah. Which freaks me out.
Yeah, that's scary. That's a scary ending.
What are some fatal mistakes, you think? Well, I think there's really only one. What are the fatal mistakes you think were made in Carnival of Souls?
Fatal mistakes.
Drag racing.
Yeah.
Drag
That's
racing.
It. I mean, everything else was, I mean, she's a great organist.
Yeah.
She's a can-do lady. Again, she's a lesbian or queer in some way and fighting against that in a heteronormative society. But for the most part, it was just the drag racing.
Without the drag racing.
Yeah.
Everybody would have been okay.
And also, Mary was not the one driving. So it wasn't even her mistake. It was her girlfriend's mistake.
I feel bad that she's just kind of like a casualty of this. A bystander.
Yeah, unfortunately. But I do think that is the takeaway. This is do not drag race.
Don't drag
teens,
race.
Teens. Any age, but especially teens. I know you're thinking, I'll have a cigarette. Get in that car, just fucking drag. But don't do it.
Don't do it.
It's too fun, and you will end up in some sort of carnival purgatory.
Yeah, and that's kind of the worst purgatory there is, I think.
Right, because at the end, are they taking her to hell? It doesn't seem like a good afterlife, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's like, come up in these nice clouds. It's puffy and nice. I think
you got to be in the lake.
Yeah, you're in the lake. Bye-bye.
You're in the lake now. And with that being said, would you like to place Carnival of Souls on the spooky scale, Allison?
A spooky scale.
I think this is a 4.
Yeah,
I think the ending is definitely scary and kind of like the unsettling nature of like kind of her existence throughout the movie is like scary, but not a lot of like big jump scares or a lot of blood. So I would a 4.
Yeah. Right. It's much more of like a dreamy, creepy, mm-hmm. creeping dread, which makes sense for what this month is, which is madness. So constantly not being able to judge your own experience of the world. Is that a ghoul? What will the ghoul's plans for me be? Should he find me? Should I agree to date a man even though I don't want a boyfriend? And I've told that to my therapist. Well, these are the questions that you can only answer when you are living it.
Yes.
I'm going to give it a 5. Okay. I'm going to give it a 5. But again, excellent movie. Really glad we did it. I mean,
fun one.
A classic for a reason. Much like we did Night of the Living Dead, where it's like, that is a classic forever.
Yes.
It is beautifully shot. It is well acted. Like, everything about it, it's like, it works as well today as it did back then. And obviously, this is much more of like a surreal nightmare movie versus like something more traditional. But beautiful. Really great.
Really great.
Really great stuff, Herk Harvey.
And this, we should have said it at the top, is our 200th episode.
Yay! Thank you for remembering that. I completely forgot. Well, we did it. Do you have any things to say? Anything to note?
I'll tell you. I don't remember 199 of them. So.
And I wouldn't have it any other way. What do you feel like you learned anything about the genre? Have you learned anything about your feelings about horror, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's like stuff where I'm like, oh, I like that. And I recognize that now from doing, you know, there are certain kind of like demons that have vibes or kind of killers origin stories that feel like it's like, oh, okay, I could kind of like see what I'm loving it. I never want to stop. I want to do this with you forever until we're at our carnival ourselves.
I can't wait. I hope we end up at the same carnival. That seems like not so bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. At least if like your friends are there.
Yeah.
You hang out with your friends.
What about you?
Any notes on 200 episodes of this psychotic podcast?
Yeah. I feel really like it makes you appreciate the care that goes into horror.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we got an email recently where someone's like, oh, I don't like it when Hallie does movies she doesn't like. And it was about 13 Ghosts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I hear you, but I need a place to vent. And this seems as good as any.
This is the right arena.
Right. But also it does, and also I did end up at least appreciating 13 Ghosts by the end of it. But I think it really, to do a scare well, I feel like having seen as many movies as we've done, and I've obviously seen many more that we haven't done,
yes,
is to appreciate the craft of filmmaking, and particularly around creating all the elements that lead up to a scare.
Yes.
And how, as a moviegoer, how I just appreciate it so much more, having seen so many movies where they don't really land the plane,
mm-hmm,
but other movies where they land so many different kinds of planes, so many different kinds, yes, of scares, so many different parts of our psyche that are like getting prickled by it. So I would say it's just a deep gratitude for horror and a real appreciation of everyone who has ever done it right in any way.
Yes.
You know, and if you're someone who's a writer of horror, like I really believe that if you need horror, horror needs you.
Yes.
I think like if you have something to offer, then that you just have to write it. The entertainment industry is collapsing, so I'm not going to like make any promises, but I think, yeah, you can know what you have to give to a genre. And I'm assuming other, like if you write rom-coms, you probably feel this way. Or like,
yeah,
dramas, like there probably is something that's like, well, I have something to share, and that is because, mm-hmm, the genre has shared something with me. And I, yes, think that's beautiful.
Yeah.
So thank you for listening, everybody. And yeah, hey, to 200 more.
I was about to say the same. To 200 more. And please, for the 200th time, we have to ask you as we leave to please keep it spooky.
Bye. Don't forget to follow us at Ruined Podcast and Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok for show updates. And if you're just as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review. Ruined is a Radio Point and Crooked Media production. We're your writers and hosts, Hallie Kiefer and Allison Leiby. The show is executive produced by Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, and Houston Snyder, and recorded and edited by Kat Iosa. From Crooked Media, our executive producer is Kendra James, with production and promotional support from Ari Schwartz, Kyle Sieglin, Julia Beach, Caroline Dunphy, and Awa Okalati.